This is Ken Logan for the Doctor's Inn, and you're listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond, and also around the world on KZFR.org. Let's see if I can get a little music for us.
I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, in the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple, it's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse, don't spill it now. I went to the doctor said, friend,
you should be. Thank you, Loudon Wainwright the Third, for the doctor. And again, this is Ken Logan, family practitioner, doctor, MD type doctor. And Doctor's Inn is the third Thursday of every month from 6 to 7 in the evening. And I do shows where I like to discuss medical and health subjects that I've feel are important or that I feel are not adequately known to the general public, etc. Something you need to know about this fact that I'm talking on the radio about these subjects is this disclaimer. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Speaking of underwriters, the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR supporters, and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit Friends of the Art. And by Tires Plus, complete auto repair. The technicians at Tires Plus provide year-round services and maintenance for your vehicle, including scheduled maintenance, oil changes, AC and cooling systems, power coating, engine repair, along with Cooper, Michelin, and all types of AG tires. Located at 624 Broadway Street, Tires Plus complete auto repair can be reached at 530-342-8338 and at tirespluschico.com and on Facebook. Let's see. All right, now it's time for the Doctor's Inn. Yay! Okay, again, this is Ken Logan. I'm a family practitioner type doctor. And on today's The Doctor's Inn, let's face it, it's summer, it's hot. Therefore, I think it's wise for me to talk at least a little bit about heat factors, laying out some facts, information, advice, so that hopefully we can all be on the same page. Relative to avoidance of injury and when injury is occurring, what to do about that. I think it's important. And then I'm going to also talk about something that I've talked about on this show before, and that's, of course, vaccination advice. Now, during COVID, the beginning of COVID, first couple of years, I talked a lot about that. But I'm going to talk today about adult vaccinations. I'm going to leave the children's ones, vaccinations to the pediatricians. I'm not hip to that anymore, not like I used to be. And the adult vaccinations are, the reason I'm bringing that up today is because it's not as simple as it used to be many years ago relative to what vaccinations are advisable, et cetera. To me, it seems that it's somewhat confusing, not only to the public, but to some of us healthcare providers as well. So I'm going to do my best today to lay out some advice on that in as simple and as straightforward a way as I can. However, interestingly, prior to that, I'm going to also look at vaccination disapproval and the interesting history of anti-vaccination opinions to a degree over the past decades and actually centuries. Then if I have time, I'm going to revisit some general information about categorization of healthcare providers in this country, because it actually continues to amaze me that the general public does not seem to know the reality involved with that, the specifics of that, when they're looking for healthcare providers in our community or in the country in general. Also, as I've said over the years, I want you to know, please let me know if you have subjects that you, the listener, would like me to cover here on this show. And again, this show is The Doctor's Inn, the third Thursday of every month from 6 to 7 p.m. Now, I suspect a person could write a brief note or letter and send it to KZFR, attention, The Doctor's Inn. But also, I'm going to give you my email address so you could email me a brief message on, again, that you're a listener and that you have a subject you would like. And you could even critique and advise me as well. And that email address, my email address, is klogan.md@yahoo.com. That's klogan.md@yahoo.com. Okay. Now on to the stress, the body stress relative to heat. You're going to notice that there's two words I keep bringing up, I'll keep mentioning or saying over the next few minutes, and they're of importance. That's why I'm going to say them a few times. Shade and water. So you're going to hear me say that periodically. Shade, water. Okay, Chico's my hometown, so summer's always been hot here, right? Also, however, I think we all know by now, our entire planet is getting hotter over time. Climate change, the trapping of heat, you know, in our environment is worsening over time. Relative to this change or warming, there's multiple factors involved, of course. However, in my opinion, of importance is the factors that we as humans are responsible for, because, of course, those are factors relative to climate change that we as humans are in charge of and therefore are able to change or improve. Seems to me that's a no-brainer. This is of massive importance currently and into the future. My opinion is that it's our responsibility to ourselves and to the future generations here on this planet. We need to listen to and respect those who fortunately are looking at climate change and studying the changes and studying the impacts and studying factors that we humans are responsible for. And therefore, how can we change and put a positive benefit relative to this phenomenon? So anyway, this aspect of the subject isn't complicated. That simple idea is not complicated in and of itself, that we humans need to do our best to mitigate, as best possible, the things that we are doing that are leading to worsening of the climate change. That's, to me, that is not an arguable thing. It's non-disputable. It's a fact. It's simply a goal. Anyway, that's my opinion. Okay, now on to medical specifics in the body about heat and us. Here's those two words. I'm going to say them again. Shade, water. Okay, of course, when we're hot in the beginning, you know, when we're in the heat, we don't feel good. It's not a pleasant feeling usually. We're all a bit different, though. Each individual is a bit different relative to what level of heat we're okay with as an individual. Therefore, some people might be more likely to have symptoms related to being overheated kind of sneak up on them compared to somebody else. You know, if some people are not bothered in the beginning, you know, by heat as much, well, their brain might not be paying attention to it as much, and it might hit them abruptly if they've not been paying attention because they're, you know, kind of putting up with it okay. So anyway, we're all different. I think it behooves us all to be wise and keep a common sense present in us when it's a hot day, right? So that bad heat effects don't sneak up on you. Therefore, now let's talk about what's going on with this heat exposure thing in our body. And it appears to me that the main, most direct cause of injury to us from excessive heat has to do not only with the heat itself on our bodies, of course, but with our body's response, and that has to do with the body's loss of water, loss of fluid levels in us. Therefore, when I'm talking about injury due to excessive heat, I'm not talking about, by the way, I'm not talking about brief exposures like when you're walking to your car on a hot day or when you're doing a relatively brief walk to the store on a hot day. I'm not talking about that. But rather, I'm talking about injury that's possible when you're involved in a more persistent exposure to excessive heat, such as when you're outside working in the heat, or when you actually are living outside, you know, such as those, think about it, such as those who don't have a home and are living outside somewhere all the time. Those kinds of exposure to heat are, therefore, working, living, more prolonged and can cause injury unless you play your cards right. Again, the main factor causing injury in that kind of situation has to a large degree to do with, or to a significant degree to do with, loss of water or a need for more water in your body. That's an important fact. We should all realize that problem, that is, that the problem related to excessive loss of body fluids in the cooling process is part of our problem in excessive heat exposure. So here's those two words again, shade and water. Okay, the next fact that I want us all to know has to do with us all realizing the actual area of the body that's going to have problems or be injured, if you will, when and or if a person has prolonged exposure to excessive heat, and that's the brain. That's an important fact to know. Think about it. It's important to absolutely be fully aware of the fact that that fact because it's part of the reason that a person can kind of get drug into a heat injury situation without realizing it. You know, without realizing what's happening until, bam, you're too deep into a situation where your brain ain't working good. You know, it kind of sneaks up on you. It can. Remember, this, it's a brain thing, so it'd be different if our brain got more sharp when we got hot, excessive hot, but it ain't. It's the other way around. So that's not good for us. It can make things worse, can allow you to hang around in the heat too long, possibly. Anyway, that's important for all of us to know. We're talking about you taking charge of your own self, but it's also very important when you're talking about watching people around you. You know, that is your loved ones, friends, relatives, children, elderly, and when you're noting people in the general public, such as people who are working around you or people who don't have a home and therefore are living outside nonstop. Their brains may not be working adequately. Keep that in mind. That person may not be acting as they normally would. You might find yourself in a situation where the person needs you to help them. Of course, whether that person actually knew they needed help or not. Think about that. Their brain not working as well as it normally does may not lead them to adequate realization that they need help either. It's something to keep in mind for all of us. Here's those two words again. Shade. Water. Okay. From the medical standpoint of heat injury, there's a couple terms that I want to discuss. I'm going to lay them out for you. Heat exhaustion and heat stroke. Those are levels of severity when it comes to brain signs and symptoms relating to heat-related brain problems and potential injury. Heat exhaustion and heat stroke. So prior to the first one, first level, heat exhaustion, your brain is working okay. You're realizing it's hot. You're thinking okay. And by the way, this is a continuum, a gradual process. It's not a point blank. You don't step from one category to the next abruptly. It's a continuum. It morphs from one to the other. Anyway, you go from not having a brain problem to the first step, which is heat exhaustion. And what are the symptoms of heat exhaustion? Well, the symptoms are going to be different for every individual, but they include, the symptoms of heat exhaustion include headache, nausea. I'm going to come back to that one because it's important. Lightheadedness, weakness, irritability, thirst, heavy sweating, elevated body temperature if that was known, and decreased urination. You know, of course, less urination happening. I'm going to read those symptoms again. So this is the kind of the first stage of actual warning that an injury of the brain might be soon to follow if you don't pay attention and deal with. And that's heat exhaustion. And symptoms include, potentially, again, different symptoms for different people, but they include headache, nausea, lightheadedness, weakness, irritability, thirst, heavy sweating, elevated body temperature, decreased urination. What to do if you or a loved one or somebody else that you're helping is in this stage of heat injury, which we call, again, heat exhaustion? What to do? Guess what? Drink water or other fluid that isn't alcohol, by the way. And why not? Why do I say that isn't alcohol? Because of course, if alcohol was the only fluid you had, I guess that's what you'd be drinking. But, you know, alcohol makes you pee, and it's not the best. Alcohol product is not the best one to rehydrate yourself with. Water and other fluids are what's needed. So if you're out drinking alcohol on a hot day, you better be drinking lots of water or other fluids also. Lots. Okay, so heat exhaustion that we're talking about, what to do? Drink more water or other fluids. Remember, the person you're helping may be nauseated, might possibly be having some nausea. That can complicate, can't it? That can complicate the issue of getting fluids in you or in that other person, right? It's not a great symptom to have when you're needing fluids orally and be nauseated. So you got to pay attention to that. If nausea is present, that if the person's awake and, you know, yeah, they're lightheaded and irritable and weak, but they're certainly awake. And able to talk to you, they know what's going on around them. And they're nauseated. Well, they have to drink fluids, and they may not, you know, they're irritable, they're weak. You are in charge, and if it's yourself, you are yourself and are in charge of sip on the fluids. If you're nauseated, you need to nonstop, repetitively sip the fluids. You cannot leave yourself or the other person in a situation of, oh, they're nauseated and they don't want to drink. Nope. Don't work that way. you're headed down to a bad place unless you get fluids in you. So it's a repetitive sip. And the person might be irritable. So gently, but yet persistently. And I'm just thinking of in the past when I've done this with people. You gently and persistently sip. That's important. I hope you all heard that. And then get out. Second thing, get out of the heat. Again, duh. That means get into shade. Get out of the sun and into shade. Secondarily, that means getting into a building, of course, that's cooler, if able. If not able, then certainly be in the shade. And remove unnecessary clothing. Get clothing off of you so that cooling can, you know, perspiration and other elements of cooling can happen. So get unnecessary clothing off, including shoes and socks for cooling reasons. So remove unnecessary clothing. So first is drink, which might mean sip. Get out of the sun, get in shade, hopefully into a cool building. Remove clothing, unnecessary clothing, including shoes and socks. Next thing, put water on yourself or the person. If you have extra water, put water on the person, on yourself or the other person, or on your face, head, neck, other areas of your body. That will help you cool. That's if you have additional water. And that could be undrinkable water if you're at a creek or something. Or get in the water. But be careful getting in the water or having somebody get in the water if their brain isn't working right, because you don't want them to drown. So that would be dangerous, actually. So be careful with that move. And then speaking of danger, that person needs to be watched. The person who's in heat exhaustion, yes, they're not unconscious and they're awake, but they need to be watched and observed. In other words, this can progress into a worsening stage, which is heat stroke. And so that person needs to be watched until they're better and they're in a safe situation. You can't leave them alone. They may need, as they progress, remember this is not this is a continuum or a worsening of symptoms that can occur. So you got to watch them for worsening, and they may need you to call 911. They may need an ambulance. So they need to be observed until they're better. There you go. Okay, now the worst stage than that of brain injury and damage, and the worst level then of heat injury, heat stress and injury, is heat stroke. And you know that term stroke, we all have heard that word stroke before when it comes to brain disease. Well, heat stroke generally is bad. And that means that the heat stress, and then on to heat exhaustion, and then it can move into a worsening or heat stroke, which means that brain now has got problems. That brain is absolutely not functioning correctly in heat stroke. There's confusion and what we would call altered mental status. In other words, brain ain't working right. Slurred speech might be present. They are not acting right. Their brain is not functioning correctly. And in that heat stroke and slurred speech thing and confusion, altered mental status thing of heat stroke, they can go on to passing out, loss of consciousness, you know, and then maybe seizures. Seizures are the, you know, the abnormal firing of our of the nerve function, nerve firing off to each other in the brain. It's a jumbled up mess of firings in the brain that leads to the body going through rhythmic contraction relaxation, or tightening of the muscles of the body in out of control, you know, unconsciously done, non-consciously done. That's a seizure, right? That means the brain is really not functioning correctly. And the skin can feel hot. It could be dry, or it could be excessively wet from sweating. Either depends on the severity and the progression. So the skin, you'd think, oh, this person's skin is dry. They might, they're not too hot. Look, their skin is dry. Nah, that's what can happen in heat stroke. Their skin could be dry. unfortunately. And the temperature, the person's temperature would be very high. So what do you do in heat stroke when their brain is that out of it? Either way confused, altered mental status, or unconscious, or seizures. I think you know this, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's an emergency. That is an emergency. The person could die. It can be, obviously, it can be fatal. So this is a 911, calling 911 problem. Don't leave the person alone. Call 911. So if you're alone with the person and you don't have a telephone, yell for other people to help you. And if you don't have a phone, the person doesn't have a phone, and it's just the two of you, and they're having the heat stroke, their brain is just gone like that. You may have to run and get to somewhere where you can call or get somebody else to call, you know, but then go back to the person and hang with them. While you're waiting for the ambulance, or you're waiting for other people to get to you to help you, and somebody else is calling 911, here's some things you could do to the person, for the person. First of all, if the person is unconscious or nearly unconscious, listen to this. If the person is unconscious, so passed out, or nearly unconscious, you know, that they are not going to be able to safely drink fluids right then. You don't want to make them choke by giving them something to swallow, like water or anything else, and they would suck it into their lungs. Then they got two problems. Their lungs are screwed up, and they have heat stroke in their brain. So if they're or unconscious or having seizures, of course, do not try to get them to swallow fluids then. Do not. You can put water on their body, various places, get them cooling, yeah, but not in their mouth. If a person has a seizure, you know, the abnormal body movements, you know, like tightened up all over and frothing at the mouth, and then that'll just, first thing to think of is that is going to stop. Don't get overexcited. That seizure is going to stop. What you really want to do, though, is move things away from around them. Don't leave things like some glass object that they're going to break and then get cut on, or something that's there that they might bang their head on. So get things moved away from them. Give them space. Give them space when they're having a seizure. Do not try to restrain them. Do not try to hold on to them, because they might get hurt and you might get hurt. Simply, however, do your best to protect them. By getting things away from them that they can't hurt them, so they can't hurt themselves on stuff. And if you were able to get some, to help their head not get banged around on cement, for instance, or onto something else, if there's a way of sliding some clothing under their head so they have some padding if their head's going to be banging. Or, depending on the case, you could sit down and have their head on your lap, but be careful. Don't be restraining their head to get it there. And do not, if somebody's having a seizure, do not put anything in their mouth. Kind of like the thing on this when they're unconscious and you don't want to give them fluids if they're unconscious. And if they're having a seizure, do not put anything in their mouth. Do not put anything in their mouth. They may be frothing at the mouth with mucus and they may be having vomit that you're seeing. And you want to, yes, you can brush that away from their mouth externally, not with your hands in their mouth. Do not put anything in their mouth. But you can get the mucus and vomit away from their mouth by rubbing the outside to get it away. And call 911. Somebody needs to call 911. But remember, a seizure is going to stop. So don't get, when you see a seizure, a person might freak out about it. True that. However, try to remember, it's protecting their head, getting things out of around them, out of their way, so they don't get hurt on it. If they happen to be in a bunk bed at Torres Shelter or somewhere like that, stand there to keep them from falling out of the upper bunk. So they don't fall out off onto the floor. All right, and 911. I'm going to say those two words again that I so love to say on this talk. Shade and water. Okay, the bottom line is this. Prolonged exposure to excessive heat sucks. It's bad. It's a bad thing. Do your best to prevent that problem from occurring. Remember to stay in the shade. Drink plenty of fluids and water. Fluids on hot days. Fluids, non-alcohol fluids. And again, if you are drinking that day alcohol, you better have much more other fluids consumed that day at that time. Stay in the shade as best you can. Remember that when you're in excessive heat, you are at risk for your brain to not work like it should. And heat exhaustion and heat stroke can sneak up on a person if you're not playing your cards right, if you're not adequately paying attention, and if you're not adequately drinking water or other fluids. So watch out and care for those around you who are elderly and children or are somehow disabled. Here's those two words again. Water. Shade. Well, I got that off my chest. Thank you for listening, if you were listening. Now on the doctor's end, I'm gonna morph into something a little more pleasant, but not necessarily a whole lot more pleasant, or not real pleasant. It's definitely more pleasant, but it's not necessarily an all pleasant subject, and that is vaccinations. just to let you know terminology right off the bat, immunizations and vaccinations are synonymous terms. Immunizations, vaccinations, same thing. And it's a subject that I have a love and hate relationship with, vaccinations. Society seems to often actually have a love-hate relationship with vaccinations for a variety of reasons. The facts that relate to the love part of the love-hate relationship have to do with the fact that infectious disease prevention can occur via the use of vaccinations. That's factual. That's a fact. Distinct fact. Infectious disease prevention occurs via because of vaccinations. Common sense and history say indeed that's true. Vaccination use decreases the presence of certain infectious diseases in our community, our country, and in the world. True fact. The hate part of the love-hate relationship for me with vaccinations has more than one factor. Let me get the straightforward factual parts out of the way first for my hate part in my opinion relative to vaccinations. And the first one is cost. Ah, you didn't think I was going to say that, did you? And the costs of vaccinations for many people in our country, anyway. That part of my hate has to do with the fact that our country lives in reverence to the almighty dollar. And that point, in fact, is because our country is a capitalistic society. That is, where the profit motive of large corporations and industries, such as pharmaceutical industry, lies in greater importance, profit motive, compared to the importance of overall health of the all of us in the population. Profit first, people's health lies somewhere further down the line of importance. That's an outcome of capitalism. That's just a fact. In conjunction with that fact, that is that even the very existence of some of the vaccinations that are developed and advertised has therefore the potential of relating to the profit motive as opposed to the overall health of the population. That potential, anyway, is certainly present in the society based in capitalism. Therefore, in my mind, as a family doctor, over the years, that's when I hear about a new vaccination being present, I'll be honest with you, the first thing that pops into my head is I wonder about the practical reality of that presence. I certainly wonder about the reality present when I hear about the advertising that the pharmaceutical company is doing relative to that vaccination. I'm telling you, it pops into my head. Then, part of my hate in the love-hate relationship with vaccinations has to do with the opposite of that, the disinformation that some people in the general public are exposed to that leads to illogical decisions on their part relative to not obtaining certain vaccinations. I'm going to say that sentence again. So part of my hate about vaccinations situation is in the love-hate relationship I have with vaccinations, part of my hate is that there is often disinformation present in social media and on the internet that leads some people in the general public to leads them to illogical decisions on their part relative to not obtaining certain vaccinations. The human brain or mind or psyche is, of course, unique among animals of the world. Along with the great things that we conjure up, there's also not great things that we conjure up. Fact versus fantasy is part of that dichotomy. Of course, we hear this contrast in an ongoing fashion lately, over the last few years. Remember, well, probably forever, but certainly the last few years. Remember, people of this country elected a person named Donald Trump as president, and some of them fantasize him as with fantasies of reverence that he can do no wrong, no matter what it is, like he's a god of some sort. That's what human minds can do. So fact versus fantasy gets in the way sometimes when it comes to the utilization of vaccinations as well. There have been anti-vaccination movements in the world for as long as there's been vaccinations of any sort. And the anti-vaccination mindset, it's always been present. It's not a new phenomenon. An article in The Atlantic magazine in July of 2015 reviewed some of the specifics of the anti-vaccination movement back in the mid-1800s in Britain and elsewhere. For instance, in 1840 in Britain, a vaccination against smallpox. You know, this smallpox back then, nasty, where you know, there in London, for instance, in the 1800s, 4,000 people would die annually from smallpox annually in London, 4,000, plus all the thousands, probably, and I don't know if it was millions, probably multiple thousands that were maimed from it and lived. In 1840, unfortunately, the government mandated the use in children of that vaccination, and the movement anti-vax occurred not only to the vaccination itself, as you can imagine, but also to that issue of mandated situation. That particular vaccine against smallpox was present in the days when purity of biologic substances such as vaccine was at risk for contamination. So there were some factual problems at the time with vaccinations, I read. Benefits outweighed the risks, but it still had some problems. That's beside the issue of fantasies and ego and power struggles of the time. In the United States in the 1870s, there also was an anti-smallpox vaccination movement, as well as in Canada in the 1870s, an anti-smallpox vaccination movement here. In this example of vaccination utilization persistence, however, smallpox over the last two centuries has essentially been eradicated in the world because of vaccinations occurring, no longer killing people or disfiguring people. Other examples of combined effort worldwide of the occurrence of vaccinations has to do with the beneficial outcome relative to markedly decreasing the presence of polio virus which we could talk about more, but it was a nasty thing, polio. In today's world, the presence of the internet in conjunction with social media outlets leads to the ability of disinformation. And, you know, even the word disinformation, you know, it's like, okay, untruths and lies to spread dramatically. Therefore, the spread of disinformation involving vaccination safety has been a problem. It happened during COVID, the early days of COVID, along with a never-ending array of other disinformation outcomes or consequences in today's world, like Trump. Anyway, that's unfortunate. And frankly, I don't know how that issue is going to ever resolve. I think the vulnerable public is at the mercy of those with fanatical ideas born from a wide variety of origins, for a wide variety of reasons or goals. It's unfortunate. All right. I do want to now say a few things about adult vaccinations that are advised. I'm going to do a list first, and then I'm going to back up and talk to them about them a little bit. So in adults, 18 and older, I'm going to list the vaccinations to think about. Influenza, so the flu vaccine. COVID vaccine, tetanus, and in specifically tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis vaccination, chickenpox vaccination or varicella, human papillomavirus or HPV vaccination, pneumococcal bacteria, one of the bacteria that can cause cancer. I'm sorry, not cancer. Oops. pneumonia causing bacteria called streptococcal pneumoniae. It's a common nasty pneumonia causing bacteria. So pneumococcal vaccine for adults. Shingles vaccine or zoster, a recombinant zoster vaccine, and then actually measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, meningococcal. In other words, one of the bacteria that can lead to infection of the brain or this covering around the brain. And then hepatitis A, hepatitis B. I'm going to back up and talk about these a bit. because maybe you want some of these and maybe you don't. And why would, and some of the latter ones that I was mentioning there, there it's not for everybody. There's certain live, certain people that will want those and certain maybe not. So I'm going to start with the more common ones. Influenza. So the influenza or flu virus vaccine every year, all adults. Why every year? Because it changes every year. and the vaccine effect and make an antibody is short, essentially short-lived. So influenza or virus vaccine is advised every year in the fall, which we're getting close to. I usually say October, but some people get started earlier, like it's starting to be available now in certain pharmacies. So I certainly would think September, October would be the times to begin. I always do October for myself. Influenza virus vaccination. COVID. So, COVID. If you're over the age of 65, the CDC says now that, and you've already had your primary series of the and have had a, including the last booster was the newer one several months ago called the bivalent one that covered the original COVIDs and some of the more recent COVIDs. So currently, now, 2023, if you're 65 years or older, you may, it's feasible to obtain a booster now of the bivalent, which is the one available now, bivalent COVID, either Moderna or Pfizer vaccination booster. If you're younger than 65 and immunocompromised, talk to your doctor about it because you probably also should get it. Immunocompromised are people with cancer under treatment, people who have HIV, people who have some of the autoimmune diseases such as diabetes, such as rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, especially those people with lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. If you have, if you're on immune system modulating medicine, some of the newer massively expensive medicines to help those conditions, then yeah, talk to your doctor about vaccination for COVID and other vaccinations. Okay, now on to tetanus. You know, all of us adults, every 10 years, it's advised to get a tetanus shot. Well, in reality, most of us want it to be what's called the Tdap, with tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis. Pertussis is whooping cough. Diphtheria is another bacteria that causes a funky thing in our oral back of our throat and things. I've never seen a case, but that it ought to be. I think it's wise to have it be the Tdap, the tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis shot, Tdap. All of us, 10 years, every 10 years. If you get a dirty wound, like a puncture wound, like a nail or a splinter that went in deep to your tissues, then you need a new one, new shot for that, tetanus. And then apparently every pregnancy a woman is advised to get that shot. Your OBGYN provider will tell you that. Okay, chickenpox. Chickenpox virus is one of the kid viruses. If you're in it nowadays, wasn't when I was a kid, but nowadays it is. Adults who the readings, and by the way, this information that I'm talking to you about right now comes from University of California San Diego Health. It's called UC San Diego Health, which is, I'm finding a great place for certain things like this. So chickenpox, varicella vaccine. If you don't know, if you've had chickenpox as a child, you don't have that history that you know of, and you've had a blood test that says you're not immune, then you ought to get the vaccine. It's a two-shot series. That is not to be done when pregnant and your health, your OBGYN, your your doctor for your pregnancy or midwife or nurse practitioner for your pregnancy would know that it's not the time to get it, nor should you get pregnant for a month after you get the shot if you're not pregnant. Let me just say that. If you're a woman and you get a chickenpox virus shot as an adult, don't get pregnant for a month. All right. HPV, human papillomavirus. Why do we care about it? Because it's the cause of cervical cancer in women. That's why. So we want to prevent it. So all people through age 26 ought to have that vaccination. And it's given in our early teens, men and boys and girls currently. But if you're in the age of 27 to 45, you talk to your healthcare provider about it because you may need that. It may be a wise thing to get that vaccination because, again, it can help prevent the HPV, the human papillomavirus's presence in people and in the community that is the cause of cancer of the cervix in women. And then now the human papilloma, I'm sorry, not human papilloma, now I'm talking about pneumococcal. Pneuma as in P-N-E-U-M-O-C-C-A-L, pneumococcal. It's a bacteria, streptococcal pneumoniae, that is a nasty one of the causes of pneumonia. All adults over the age of 65 and older are advised to get it. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 different pneumococcal vaccines out there, so you gotta talk to your doc or somebody like that about which one to get or ones to get, because in one situation you might want two shots. So that can be a little tricky. And if you're younger than 65, you may want it too, especially if you have lung disease, such as asthma or diabetes or other illnesses. Talk to your doctor. The shingles vaccine. Or zoster, shingles, zoster, same thing, zoster, shingles. Confusingly so, that's the chickenpox virus. But nonetheless, zoster or shingles vaccine. Now the new one is called a recombinant zoster vaccine. It's not a live virus anymore. That's a two-shot series. It's advised for everybody over the age of 50. Whether you've had a shingles outbreak in your life or not. Or if you've had the live vaccine, the original vaccination for shingles, which was a few years ago, well, you're still advised now to get this new two-shot series of the new recombinant shingles shot. Two of them. First one and then a booster. You're younger, if you're 19 and older, let's say 19 to age 50, you may want it too, if you're in an immune compromised state. So talk to your doctor. Immune compromised, as in cancer with treatment, HIV, certain conditions that lead to immune system modulating medicines such as rheumatoid arthritis and lupus. Okay, now measles, mumps, rubella. Adults born in 1957 and older who are not known to be immune to measles, mumps, rubella should probably get it, the shot. It should not be given to pregnant women. And again, on this one also, women should not get pregnant for four weeks. If a woman gets it and is of the age where pregnancy could occur, don't get pregnant for a month after you get that particular vaccination, if you get it, the MMR or measles, mumps, rubella. Well, looks like I better slow down and call it quits on the show, or lean that way anyway. You know that the opinions you've been listening to here are mine, Dr. Logan's, Ken Logan. They're not necessarily the views. They may not represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. They are my opinions. I'm the one to blame. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, KZFR supporters. Thank you. And by Lampe Construction, and Lampe is Lampe. I'm not dash, but Lampe Construction. A proud supporter of KZFR and Community Radio in Northern California. For more information, visit DALampeConstruction.com. So D-A and then L-A-M-P-E Construction.com. And by Mountain Sports, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, backpacking, camping, traveling, and enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at 176 East 3rd Street in downtown Chico, serving Chico and the North State since 1975. Again, if you got a subject you want me to hit on this show, The Doctor's Inn, my email address, klogan.md@yahoo.com. I'm going to see if I can, by the way, stay tuned for Planetary Radio. I'm going to try to play a song by Steely Dan right now called Dr. Woo, and then go on to Planetary Radio at 7 o'clock. But let's see if I can make Dr. Woo play.
New data from JWST adds another piece to the puzzle, this week on Planetary Radio. I'm Sarah Al-Hamed of the Planetary Society, with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. A team of researchers using the James Webb Space Telescope, or JWST, has detected water vapor in the inner region of a protoplanetary disk that is already forming planets. Julia Perotti and Thomas Henning from the Max Planck Institute of Astronomy join us to talk about their team's research and what it might be able to tell us about the formation of worlds like Earth. But first, you'll